Today, an interest group representing California truck drivers will be in court. They filed a lawsuit hoping to exempt the trucking industry from the sweeping provisions of AB 5. That's California's so-called gig worker law, which takes effect on January 1. It's called the gig worker law because it would, in fact, make it much harder for gig economy companies like Uber, Lyft, and Postmates to call their drivers independent contractors, or at least that's the idea. It means that these companies would have to offer drivers the protections of being an employee. But as the trucking lawsuit shows, it's not just the quote-unquote gig economy here in California that this sweeping new law will affect. And some independent contractors, from truckers to entertainers and interpreters and therapists and many other industries, are not happy that they're being swept in. We're joined here in the studio by Angela Reddick Wright, an employment attorney, investigator, and mediator, a managing attorney of the LA-based Reddick Law Group. Angela, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we want to hear from you because we've got an employment attorney here, an expert in AB 5, to answer your questions potentially and help set us straight on just what this law does, because it's very complicated. It's a very, the bill that passed it is very lengthy. So if you're an independent contractor, we're hoping to take your calls this hour. Gig workers, independent contractors, not just Uber and Lyft and Postmates drivers, but others as well. What questions do you have about this new law and how will it affect your bottom line? You can give us a call, 866-893-KPCC. Again, that's 866-893-5722, or go online, the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Now, Angela, I'm wondering if you can sort of help us underline why this law is important here. Why does it matter whether an independent contractor is classified as an employee?
It's important because in the state of California, part of the reason that the legislature state and their intent that they pass this law is because they feel that many individuals and many workers have been underpaid, that they haven't benefited from what it means to be an employee, such as being paid minimum wage or having opportunities for sick pay or other benefits that come with being an employee. And they also state that in the state of California, that the state itself has missed out on millions of dollars in payroll, in taxes that would be associated with employees. So that's the intent from the legislative perspective. And then just from a day-to-day employee-employer perspective, it's important that employers classify their employees properly so that you know how to treat them on a day-to-day basis. And employers treat contractors very differently than they treat employees. And right. So it's important to make that distinction so that you know what benefits individuals are entitled to on a day-to-day basis.
And then if, of course, they're entitled to those benefits, that means significant costs to employers. So it's, you know, this whole change that's happened in the last couple of years in California has a significant impact on employers' bottom line as well.
For sure. And that's why many employers have lobbied against AB 5 and similar laws and are positioning themselves now to challenge the law, both in court and through a ballot initiative in 2020.
We're also joined on the show here today by Carolyn Saeed, a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers business, tech, and the on-demand economy. Carolyn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us how big of a deal is the gig economy in California? Do we have a sense of how many Californians are independent contractors and how, you know, kind of what the scope of this law's impact is going to be?
Yeah, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who work in gigs of one form or another. In what we talk about is the gig economy, meaning the sort of app-based companies that serve as clearinghouses like Uber, Lyft, Postmates, DoorDash. That alone is hundreds of thousands. And then there's a whole variety of other professions that are somewhat more traditional, you know, yoga instructors and hair salon workers and franchisers and truck drivers that are also working as independent contractors. So the impact of the law could be quite sweeping. However, that impact is not necessarily going to be felt, you know, far and wide on January 1st. It doesn't automatically reclassify anyone. Companies either have to proactively do that to fend off lawsuits and just because they want to be doing, you know, in compliance with the law, or else there will be lawsuits by individual workers, by the state itself and the labor commissioner's office, by attorneys, city attorneys of the big cities in California are empowered under the law to go after companies that they feel are non-compliant. So I would expect to see a lot of legal action in the coming year as this sort of all shakes out.
And something we should probably clearly label, Carolyn, is that when we're talking about, you know, this bill is being shorthanded as affecting Uber, Lyft, Postmates drivers. But I believe I've read in your reporting that Uber and Lyft are not going to reclassify employees on January 1. Is that right?
That is correct. Uber and Lyft say that they feel that they still pass the much stricter criteria that the bill sets up for determining whether or not a worker is an employee or an independent contractor. Uber's chief legal officer has said that he plans to fight it in court and, you know, feels he can pass this higher barrier in court. But in addition, Uber, Lyft, plus DoorDash, Postmates, and Instacart have joined forces and so far have put up $110 million to seek a ballot initiative. As Angela mentioned, they're going to try to start collecting signatures next month, and they're going to aim for the November ballot, seeking to exempt delivery drivers and ride-hail drivers. It creates sort of their own category where they would remain independent contractors, but they would be entitled to some employment-like rights, such as a minimum wage guarantee and some forms of benefits.
Again, we're hoping to hear from some of the people who could potentially be impacted by AB 5, by this gig economy bill, independent contractors, gig workers. We want to know what questions you have. We want to know how this is going to affect your bottom line. Give us a call, 866-893-KPCC. That's different from our pledge drive number. So I'm going to say it again, 866-893-5722. You can go online to the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Leave a comment there or tweet us at AirTalk. I want to take a call now and maybe get a perspective from some people who are calling in. Let's go to Susan in Glendale. Susan, you're on AirTalk.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for being there. My question is, can you sue for prior wages if you've worked for almost 10 years as a freelancer after having contacted another attorney who defined the scope of what I did as more of an employee rather than a freelancer, that I had done so much for the company.
Angela Reddick Wright is with us. She's an employment attorney and a managing attorney of the LA-based Reddick Law Group. This has been an issue of, like, does this apply retroactively? And part of the court fight in this initially was like, well, where is AB 5 going to apply? Where does the court decision that sort of presaged all of this, the dynamics decision, how does this apply to all of this? Can you sue for back wages if you feel you've been misclassified as an independent contractor going back years?
Thank you, Susan, for your question. So there, it's important to distinguish between back issues or retroactive issues and AB 5 and what happens going forward. Mm-hmm. So since the beginning of time, for a long time, there have been laws on the book that distinguish between employees and independent contractors. AB 5 is the strictest of those laws, but we've seen it evolve over the years. So to answer Susan's question, yes, you can still pursue, and this is not an opinion as to whether, you know, the merits of your claim, but yes, you can still pursue a claim if you feel that you've been improperly classified as a contractor versus an employee. The current law states for wage and hour claims in California is you have up to 3 years. The statute of limitations is 3 years, and it will continue to be 3 years even with the implementation of AB 5 to pursue any type of wage claim or misclassification claim.
So it's the same as it always has been, but does that mean that there is now a new standard of whether you apply to the under the old rules or whether the new rules apply? Just to be clear, does that mean AB 5's new rules also apply retroactively?
Yes, AB 5 would now be the starting January 1. AB 5 would not now be the standard by which misclassification claims are judged. And Carol mentioned this. She said that Uber and Lyft feel that they can comply with the stricter standards. And there are basically three elements to that, those stricter standards. And that would apply to whether Susan or others have a potential claim. Do we have time to go into it?
We have about 30 seconds. Here.
Okay, yeah. So maybe we can circle back to those three elements. But the first is whether the employer controls the workers' work and environment. The second is whether the worker is performing work that is a normal part of the employer's business. If so, then it's probably not a contractor. The employee, the individual is probably an employee. And then finally, is this the type of work that the worker does for other clients? Is the employee, worker actually in business for him or herself?
Right. The ABC test, as I understand it's
exactly.
called. That's what I've learned reading up on this. And we're going through all of the ABCs and the 1-2-3s of AB5,
exactly.
which is California's new gig worker bill. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. But we want to hear from those of you who are gig workers. Give us your questions about the new law and tell us how this new gig worker law is going to affect your bottom line. We'll be coming back with an employment attorney and a reporter to sort through all of it on Air Talk. Welcome back to Air Talk. Good to have you with us. I'm Kyle Stokes in for Larry Mantle. We're talking about AB 5 this hour. This is the gig worker bill that is going into effect on January 1, sweeping provisions that would turn many independent contractors, in theory, into employees. And we're talking about how all of this is going to work with attorney Angela Reddick Wright and reporter Carolyn Saeed of the San Francisco Chronicle. And let's start with a call here from Pierre in Altadena. Pierre, you're on Air Talk.
Hi there. How you doing? I'm just calling because I've been running an independent videography business. We do legal videography, and I hire others who do videography to help me out, as we never know what our call is going to be. We might have all of our jobs one day of the week and no jobs for the other 4 days of the week. And so we don't know. And so these guys all have business licenses. They usually are a DBA or they've got a corporation. Am I still able to hire these people in the future?
Angela Reddick Wright, you're an attorney. You've sort of advised people on both sides of this law. What would you say?
Well, thank you for the work you do in the legal industry as an attorney. I appreciate that. So it really, before the break, we mentioned the three-prong test, the ABC test. And I think the third prong is the question that you need to ask yourself primarily as a business owner. And that is whether the individuals you're working with, whether they truly are in business for themselves. So it sounds like there's some elements that suggest they are, which you just mentioned, like they have their own business license. Perhaps they have business cards and other things that represent that they are in business. But the key to that will be, do they have other clients? Are they only working for you and your company? And are they only waiting to be scheduled when your company calls? Are they using your company's equipment, only servicing your company's clients? If that's the case, there's a big question as to whether they're a contractor. But if they work for others, they can come and go as they please. They can decline jobs from your company. They use their own equipment, for example. Those are strong indicators that they possibly qualify as a contractor.
I want to bring in Carolyn Saeed, who's a reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle and has been covering the rollout of this bill. Carolyn, can you talk about, I mean, this is obviously very complicated, and just because it sounds complicated, I think there's obviously, you know, that raises a lot of concerns, change is hard. But there were, there are a lot of reasons why this had to happen when it did. Can you talk about the backstory of how this law came together? What were the authors thinking about when they put this new law together?
Well, yeah, exactly. This law didn't just spring out of nowhere. This law is actually based on a California Supreme Court decision from spring 2018 that was a unanimous decision referred to as Dynamex after a delivery company. And that is actually what set up this much stricter ABC test as the law of the land. So basically, even if this law had not been written, we would be in a similar situation. But what the law does is it takes that California Supreme Court decision and it codifies and clarifies it, and it extends it. That decision applied only to wage orders, and now it's now going to apply to other things like unemployment insurance. And it also
I'm sorry to interrupt, Carolyn, but just to put a fine point on that, the it was a narrow decision focusing on only one employee protection, and so the bill was to ensure that other employee protections would be. It was clear that what the state's goal was that all of these employee protections would be involved going forward.
Yes, that is exactly right.
Gotcha. I'm sorry to cut you off.
In some ways, it expands it to more employee protections, but it also narrows it in some ways in that it took a lengthy list of, you know, there are actually dozens of industries and professions that did win exemptions from this from AB 5. They're still subject to tests over whether they are independent contractors or employees, but they're subject to an older test that has a little more wiggle room in it. So it's just a really lengthy list. You know, doctors, dentists, podiatrists, veterinarians, insurance brokers, lawyers, architects, engineers, accountants. Those are some of the many professions that are exempt. And then, as Angela was starting to talk about too, some people who work as freelancers or independent contractors could be exempt if they really genuinely have their own business. For example, if they're incorporated, or if they're paying business taxes in their business license fees in their city, there are ways that they could, you know, make a case that they genuinely should be exempt because they genuinely
the rules here are so complicated. Let's go to a caller who actually sounds like they're sort of in this sort of a space of limbo. Lynn is in North Hollywood. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I am a physical therapist, a professional licensed, and I'm a retiree. I worked as an employee for many years. I am now an independent contractor by choice, working limited hours, 5 to 10 hours a week by choice. And I'm wondering if I'm subject to this or if I can continue as an independent contractor.
Angela Reddick, right? As an employment attorney. Angela, what would you say?
Yes, you can, as long as you can come and go as you please. I don't know if you work just for one office or multiple offices. If you work for multiple offices, that is definitely a strong indicator that you are a contractor because you're servicing more than one podiatrist office or physical therapist office. The big question is whether any one of those offices or employers are in control and directing your work to the point that you cannot utilize your skills, your expertise, your experience, your background to really service clients in the way that you deem as appropriate. And then the other issue is whether the office, as a part of their normal course of business, if they would normally hire physical therapists full-time or as employees. I imagine most of the offices you work for, that's the business they're in, so they probably do hire physical therapists full-time or as employees. So I think the real key question for you is freedom, flexibility, discretion, and servicing multiple offices as opposed to one office.
Carolyn Saeed of the San Francisco Chronicle, I want to return quickly to the backstory of how this bill came together. Obviously, there was a court decision that is sort of dealing with all of the sort of the very difficult provisions that are involved here and sorting out how they're going to apply. But in making the determination of how this was going to apply going forward, there was a lot of influence from labor unions who are primary supporters of this bill. Can you talk about what their sort of aim was in pushing for this legislation?
Yes, the California Labor Federation is, in fact, a sponsor of the bill. And I think labor unions, you know, see their historic role as organizing workers for better treatment. And they see this bill, labor unions cannot organize independent contractors under federal law. That's, you know, just not allowed. So they see this bill as creating many, many more employees that they could go out and organize. So they're very gung-ho about getting the bill passed. We're gung-ho about getting it passed, and they are hoping to do organizing.
Right. When they're talking about organizing the employees, does AB 5 actually allow the gig workers to unionize? Do either of you know? I've read that there might be some ambiguity about this moving forward.
You mean outside of AB 5? Outside of being classified as an employee?
Right. Exactly. That AB 5, for example, would not necessarily give Uber drivers the opportunity to be unionized employees to organize
right.
into unions.
Right. So as Carolyn indicated, AB 5 itself doesn't say, okay, now that you are classified as an employee, you automatically can be a part of a union. But by individuals becoming employees, there's certain rights and benefits that come with that. And part of that, you know, is the opportunity to organize and to form a union under the traditional employment and labor laws of the state and also federal labor laws.
Carolyn, before we let you go, I just wanted to point out one of the stories that you had done about this that highlights a real, you know, pressure point in the implementation of this law. The entertainment industry, we all know how important that is to California's economy. It doesn't seem like a lot of big movie makers are going to be touched to this because, as I understand, most of their workers are employees and not independent contractors, even though they're working gigs. We can get into how that works. But you and a colleague, Carolyn, at the Chronicle wrote about how there's real division among artists who may not be directly in this sphere of the big movie making industry and about how they see this bill.
That's right. So yeah, the Hollywood system is heavily unionized. It's not affected. It's already, you know, most people who make movies or TV shows are already working as employees, even if they are doing it as gigs. However, there's so many small and medium-sized theater companies, dance companies, music companies, and they generally have been, often have been using independent contractors. Not all. You know, when you get to bigger theaters, they use unionized actors and they hire people as employees. But these small companies that are nonprofit and they're kind of just operating on, you know, on a wing and a prayer, they're really worried about what are they going to do to comply. Some have already started the process of saying for future productions, we will make our company's employees, which, you know, is great in the sense that it means that the artists, both on stage and backstage, will make you know, minimum wage, will make overtime, but it's difficult for these companies in the sense that they don't have the money. they need to, this can add up 20% to 30% to their labor costs, and so they're looking at where are they going to get that money. I talked to one small company in Berkeley that has actually created a fund for this very purpose and is fundraising for this, and has been doing so actually fairly successfully. That's Shotgun Players in Berkeley.
Well, is that a point to sort of say that people will understand that maybe this is a way that artists can make a living wage, and if you can fundraise around it successfully, maybe that's a reason to fear that maybe employers are not necessarily going to be harmed as badly as they may fear.
Well, you can fundraise about it in a community like the arts community, which is already heavily supported by donations. I don't see Uber and Lyft going out and getting foundations to give them money, you know, or any for-profit company that they should go out and get that foundations
right.
to give them money to treat their workers with the basic rights that all employees have in the United States.
All right. Well, Carolyn Saeed of the San Francisco Chronicle, I want to thank you so much for your time and helping us understand AB 5 today. Thank you so much for joining us. We're talking about AB 5 here on Air Talk here on 89.3 KPCC. This is California's new gig worker law that takes effect on January 1st and promises to overhaul the way that California thinks about gig workers. Are they independent contractors? Well, under this law, theoretically, they're supposed to be classified as employees, creating a bunch of new costs for employers to provide them with employee benefits and protections, just like sick time or workers' comp, things that cost money for employers, but also could make things easier, in theory, for employees. Although, as we're learning this hour and from you, it's certainly much more complicated when you get down into the weeds because it is so sweeping. We do want to hear from you. How is this affecting your bottom line if you're an independent contractor, if you are driving for Uber or Lyft or Postmates, if you are in business for yourself as an independent contractor? How do you think that this bill is going to, this law, I should say, is going to affect your bottom line? We have so many comments that we got from listeners, and thankfully we've got an employment attorney here, Angela Reddick Wright of the Reddick Law Group, here to answer some of those questions, and we're so grateful to have her here. Let's start with a tweet that we got from Hannah, who said that grant writers are exempt. Do you have to file for an exemption, or does it just come automatically, Angela?
There's no official form or anything that you file
okay.
For exemption. So it's really in the contractual relationship between the worker or the contractor and the the company or the employer, and how that relationship is treated. So it all goes back to the three-prong test.
So
if you're treated like a contractor and you truly are a contractor, then you qualify for the exemption. But if you're not, then you're probably misclassified as a contractor as opposed to an employee.
Now, we've kind of, we didn't give you a chance to really talk about that three-prong test. So let's just give a second to talk through those three basic points again, just in case people are tuning in, because this is basically the decision-making criteria. This is how we're going to figure out if AB 5 applies to you, whether you're going to have to revisit your independent contractor status or not. What is the ABC test?
So it starts, the first question in the ABC test is whether the company or the employer controls the work or directs the work of the worker. And I use the word worker as opposed to employee just to drive home right. the point that they have to be properly
An
classified,
important distinction.
Right? So what does it mean to control or direct the work? When you think of an employee in a traditional context, is usually you have to arrive at work at a certain time every day. You have a set schedule. You have set breaks. You receive a paycheck on a weekly or biweekly basis. On a day-to-day basis, your employer tells you what your job description is and what you're required to do as a part of providing services to that employer. So if we find those elements with someone who has been classified as a contractor, then they probably don't meet the first prong of the ABC test. The second question in the ABC test is whether the worker performing the work is outside the usual course of the employer's business. So simply put, is this something the employer would normally hire someone else to do?
I mean, I know this is a controversial point, but like Uber is in the business of driving people around. And if you're hiring people to drive people around, the argument goes that you're probably not an independent contractor. I know that this is still being litigated literally, but that's the idea.
Right. And as you mentioned, that is controversial, but maybe a more an example that we can all relate to, and this happens a lot with small and mid-sized businesses, they may hire someone as a receptionist, for example, and say that that person is a contractor.
Mm.
Well, the problem with that is you probably would hire a receptionist anyway for your business, particularly if you have a brick and mortar business where people are visiting. And so that's someone that would be in the normal course of your business. And you're probably directing and controlling the work of that person as well.
It shows how those prongs of the test work together.
Right, exactly.
So prong number three is?
And then prong number three is really, is the person truly in business? And I like to say, looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it is a duck. So if you're in business for yourself, you have a business license, you pay taxes, you have other clients, you have your own office, your own equipment, you have insurance. Those are the things that indicate someone is truly in business. But if you have someone working with you and they're only working with you, they show up at your office every day, they're working according to a schedule, you're treating them like everyone else in your office, they don't pay taxes, they're not incorporated, they don't have a website, they don't have business cards, that person is not truly in business for themselves.
Right. So interestingly, I'm thinking about what all of that list of the equipment that you might have. We talked also about how the entertainment industry is going to be affected by this. And now apparently big movie makers, big companies that are using a lot of unionized workers to make their movies or what have you, that's probably not going to apply to them. We did get, comments, though, from Jonathan in Hollywood and heard a lot during the debate over the bill about this. And what Jonathan says is, I want to point out there are a lot of people in TV film that are independent contractors and like it that way. A lot of us are very upset because it will limit our work, our ability to work independently and set up our own 401ks. We tried to get in a word while the bill was being developed, but felt shot out of the process. That from Jonathan in Hollywood and many others who say this could really be harmful to the independent film industry where there isn't as much unionized labor. Why is it that I could be a unionized person, but still maybe I do have, my own equipment to the point that you were making earlier? Why is it that unions are treated differently, even if you're still doing gig work, just as a union employee?
So in entertainment industry, remember they have unions like SAG-AFTRA,
right.
Or they're unions for screenwriters, et cetera. So it's sort of a dual situation where they get the protection of the unions, like the unions help to set their rates and what benefits they receive when they're working on a set. But at the same time, you can still go out and work as a union, not protected by the union and all the rights that come with the union. You can still go out and do it under the guise of your own company. So Hollywood is a little bit different. We also see the media industry being impacted, right, both broadcast and print. We've seen articles, and I've gotten calls from, for example, freelance journalists who work for multiple print media companies and enjoy it and like it and like the freedom and flexibility that they have of being able to work for multiple companies. So they are concerned that their freedom and flexibility will be limited because now big media companies are having to decide, will we have a team of freelance folks or will we bring it all in-house and have make everyone an employee? But obviously, there'll be fewer people that they can employ, meaning that many others might be locked out or will have to consider other opportunities.
Right. August tweeted at AirTalk, freelance writers and journalists are losing an opportunity from income left and right due to the submission cap of 35 articles per year, is what I said. She got that right? 35
yes.
pieces a year. Most of us are small businesses and do not want, in some cases, can't become employees. If a freelance writer or journalist is like an LLC, if they have an LLC for themselves, does that exempt them from this sort of the ambiguities of AB 5?
Well, I think they have a good argument because they're, in most instances, they're working for more than one media outlet, mm-hmm, and they presumably are set up even if it's as a sole proprietor, but they're paying business taxes, et cetera. I think they have a strong argument. It's the freelance writer that's only working for one outfit or one company that I think will have the problem and really doesn't have a separate business set up separate from that.
We just have about 30 seconds left, but I'm curious to know, the author of this bill has said there's probably going to be future clarifications about it. I'm wondering if there's any changes that you think are likely to come because of ambiguities that have arisen as this bill is being implemented in just a few seconds. I'm sorry.
I think primarily we'll start to see some additional exemptions or professions that are exempted as they're able to make the argument that their profession, that the work that they do truly qualifies as contractor work as opposed to employee work.
Angela Reddick Wright is an employment attorney and investigator, a mediator with the LA-based Reddick Law Group, joined us today to discuss AB 5, California's new gig worker law. Angela, thank you.
Thank you.